This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
8:36 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Keith Kam. In half an hour, we have the opening bell where we check out how Bursa Malaysia begins the trading day. But before that, we're talking about how to replenish government coffers. Now, the saying goes, nothing in this world is certain except for death or taxes. But I would argue this doesn't really apply if you're living in Malaysia at a time of tax reform. I think there are a lot of uncertainties on taxes at the moment. In tabling the revised budget 2023, Prime Minister Datuk Seri Anwar Ibrahim laid out the case for strengthening the government's fiscal standing by improving tax collection revenue. However, the mechanisms for expanding the tax base is still being debated, with several proposals on the table.
So yeah, the budget announcement included the introduction of a luxury goods tax, as well as the possibility of a capital gains tax on unlisted shares. The details of either tax have yet to be finalised, with the government promising consultations with stakeholders. Meanwhile, what is off the table, at least for now until a year later on, is a broad-based consumption tax like the GST. All that said, given the general consensus that the GST is a more equitable form of tax, is the return of GST a question or not? If, but when?
For thoughts on how the government should go about introducing reforms to Malaysia's taxation system, we speak to Dr. Virinderjit Singh, chairman of Tricor Malaysia. He's also the vice chair of the Global Tax Commission of the International Chamber of Commerce based in Paris. Dr. Virinderjit, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's start with just a big picture assessment. What do you make so far of the government's approach to tax reform? Would a more holistic strategy be preferable to the seemingly piecemeal changes being made at the moment?
Yeah, thank you. Well, if you look at past budgets, I think we've always done a piecemeal kind of an arrangement, right? Mm. Even the introduction of a GST way back was one of those examples where we announced it earlier and then we implemented it later. But it's never a situation where you get a holistic roadmap in terms of where are we going in the next 5 to 10 years. So if you ask me, would it be better? Yes, I'm a proponent of having a holistic roadmap to at least alert everyone the possibilities, not to say the certainty of implementing, but the possibilities that are being considered. But the other story that we need to bear in mind is that no government in power will give out all their cards. And therefore, there's a danger here for them, for the politicians, in terms of how the rakyat will react and so on. You know? So as you can see, we just talk about a small capital gains tax on unlisted shares and look at the hoo-ha that's happening, and we talk about the luxury goods tax and the hoo-ha that's happening. And these are small measures, but obviously we'll know more when the details come. So yes, piecemeal kind of changes have been occurring. And the government selects little things they want to introduce every particular budget. Mm. But I am a proponent that we hope to see a good roadmap for the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah.
Dr. V, the rationale for capital gains tax on the disposal of shares of unlisted companies versus the conventional CGT models, what details need to be ironed out? What are the differences here?
Well, I think when you introduce, but you must remember that we do have a capital gains tax, but it's limited only to real property, all right? So in that sense, it shouldn't be very new to people when we actually are expanding the base. That's really how I see it. Now, in the context of this particular proposal on gains on unlisted disposal of unlisted shares being subject to a low rate of tax, it is a start, but the danger here and the concern everybody will have is that we will slowly widen the scope. And that's a reality, because if you move along the chain of being a high-value society, high-income society, developed nation, hopefully, eventually, you will find that the scope of coverage of a CGT will be widened, because as the government develops a nation and as it becomes a developed nation, more funds are needed, you know, in particular to manage all the benefits that we wish to provide to our citizens. So to iron out this particular issue of tax, CGT, on the gains on the sale of unlisted shares, is really some clarification has already been given. It doesn't apply to shares that you have to dispose in the context of an IPO. So that's good. Secondly, it's a low tax rate. The other thing that has to be considered is, will it be a new piece of legislation or will it be incorporated into an existing piece of legislation? Now, in many countries, you'll find that capital gains tax is included in your normal income tax return form. So you report your income, so your profits, and that's subject to income tax. And then at the same time, there's a column, you report on the capital gains you made in the particular year. So in the end, that was probably a much neater way of implementing this CGT. And because you don't create more and more administrative aspects of managing this tax in terms of more returns to be filed and so on. Mm. So what you need to work out is what would be the tax rate. And my own predictions are that it could be 5 or 10% of the gains. And to me, does it impact society? Sure, everything impacts society. I think earlier it was mentioned that nothing is certain other than death and taxes. That still holds true. Whatever it is the question of how much of taxes and what variety of taxes do you pay. So there is an impact, but in the end of the day, what's the problem with paying, let's say, 10% of the gains that I made on the disposal of shares in an unlisted enterprise? And I come to a recent example that we all have aware of. It's public knowledge. Farmfresh, for example, bought a particular ice cream venture for almost 80 million. And entrepreneurs obviously made a good killing. So the question is, if you made a gain on it, presume the gain could be 60 million. So if you pay 6 million of that to the government, I don't think anybody is going to go crying to anyone. So I think we can live with it. But of course, if it's 50%, then I think there's reason to shout about this particular tax being impeding you and so on.
Dr. Vrindajit, how much additional income can feasibly be earned from CGT, especially if it's expected to be a low percentage? And on top of that, what about the trade-offs then? I mean, is that low amount of income, is the trade-off of, I guess, less investment or, you know, lower entrepreneurship sentiment, is it worth it then?
Yeah, I think the point to also note is that when you look at broader tax reform, you do not start with a tax at a higher rate and you do not start with a tax which has a wide base, because that can be disastrous, right, from a political and optics point of view. So is this going to add substantial amounts to the government's coffers? Not necessarily. I think the point is, at the end of the day, it is a journey that we want to start on, and we want to collect something so that at least there is a widening of the base. So I think the concept here is widening of the base, and we need to see how much we can get as we move along, because it depends on deals. Depends on the sales. But actually, if you look at statistics that are maybe available more to the Inland Revenue Board, because stamp duty is charged on all these contracts, right? So when you sell shares to another party, you still got to get the contract stamped. So I dare say that the Inland Revenue would have the data. If you analyze the past 10 years or so of sales made on shares of unlisted companies, and apparently it is running into the billions in terms of value. So the question is, if it's 10% of that, it adds hundreds of millions. It doesn't add billions to your coffers, but still that's a good start. So I think I don't have the numbers because it's not public knowledge as to what can be collected. But the point to make is that we're starting a journey. And I think we have to look at it very succinctly in terms of what is the purpose and what is the objective. So if it doesn't hurt as many people, then I think it is a good way to start.
You mentioned broad-based taxes just now, and I just want to mention the GST. Prime Minister Dato' Sri Anwar did mention in Parliament that it would not be reintroduced within the next 6 months to 1 year, citing that household income thresholds are too low. I'm not sure if we should read anything into this, but what kind of economic conditions would facilitate the reimposition of GST?
Yeah, one of the fundamentals of a GST from the theoretical side of it is that if there is a high rate of inflation, then it's suicidal to introduce a GST immediately, right? So I think Anwar Ibrahim is correct. Inflation has to be managed. Inflation has to come down and before you even think about the GST. So I'm a proponent of saying that, look, I have been a proponent of GST as being an efficient tax. But I'm also a proponent of the fact that we have the current SST. Can we not improve this first before we eventually metamorphose into a full-blown GST? And I think that's possible. So to me, at the end of the day, inflation rates, and I think the point that that the Prime Minister has hit on the nail is this point about a low-income society, and that's really has always been coming back to haunt us. Because when you have a low-income society, you then find that the regressiveness of a GST is much more pertinent an issue to consider, because it then affects the larger segment of society which buys certain products. So you can manage that through exemptions and so on. But once you start doing that, and you give exemption after exemption, then you find that you are watering down your GST. So that's something we had a problem with earlier as well when we introduced it. But the other problem we had is the fact that perhaps the smaller, the SME sector did not bite into GST. And there were issues. There was also some aspects of evasion. But GST largely is being touted as a good tax. And I say that very openly in various commentaries I made, that it is an efficient and effective tax in trying to curtail evasion. People taking themselves out of the net. You have a much stronger tracking mechanism through the tax invoicing structure that occurs. And that is the strength of the GST. Well, the other point that I always read and hear about, which sometimes gives me a chuckle, is this fact that many think that we can produce billions of dollars or ringgit of revenue from GST into this in GST. I think they're sadly mistaken. The point at the end of the day is when we had a GST, we actually covered a very wide segment of goods and services. Almost 78 to 80% of all goods and services were covered. Now, currently, the SST, it only covers around 40% of goods and services. So to me, at the end of the day, we find that all these commentators don't seem to know the big picture. And obviously, if you cover half of what was covered earlier, you'll get half of the revenue that you would have collected.
Right.
So I think we will introduce this in due course as the economy changes shape. But we should look at our current SST and try to see are there better ways of improving that so that we do not create any anomalies in the structure. That would be my advice in this. And I do think the long term, we should look at a holistic GST. Call it whatever you like, but it could be the SST which could metamorphose into having mechanisms and attributes, and we can continue to call it the SST without any issue, but we need to work at it, and I think government has to look.
Thank you so much, Dr. Virendrajit. That was Dr. Virendrajit Singh, Chairman of Tricor Malaysia, talking to us about tax reforms and giving suggestions on how the government can approach this very prickly issue. It is 8:49 in the morning. We're heading into some messages, but when we come back, we'll discuss the new Puspal guidelines for international concerts. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.